Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change. On the 6th of April 2019, Lassana Abdullahi Suleiman, an Ivorian migrant living here in Malta, was gunned down, shot in the head. Two Ghanaians were also injured in the attack. Prior to that, several cases of racial abuse had been reported on that particular street close to the Open Center for Migrants in Haffa, here in Malta. Now, today's show is not a story about a dangerous street or a brutal murder, although it has been speculated widely as racially motivated. Today's show is also not a Maltese bashing session. Now, today on Talking Heads, we'll be delving into the seeming incongruence or the disjoint between government policy for migrants here in Malta and elsewhere and its implication on the ground. The question is, are Maltese people really on board with all these migrants flooding into the country? My name is Solis Rose Quarte, and this is Talking Heads Season 3. We'll be right back. Welcome back from that break. If you just tuned in, this is Talking Heads Season 3. Now, today's topic might hit a particularly sore spot if you're a migrant living in Malta. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I'd like to reiterate, this episode is dedicated to shedding light on the issues that migrants face in the integration process, especially regarding community acceptance. This is not an episode to bash Malta. Now that we have that out of the way, I'd like to introduce our guest for today. She goes by the name Dr. Maria Pisani, who previously held the post of Head of Office for the International Organization for Migration. Thus, she has experience in the areas of refugee settlement, human trafficking, among others. The co-founder and director of Integra Foundation, Dr. Maria Pisani, is also the editorial board member on the International Journal Disability and the Global South and guest editor for the special issue, Disability Asylum and Migration for Disability and the Global South. Now, she is also well known as a human rights advocate, definitely one worth commendation. I won't go any further. I can't say too much. Let's just introduce her right now. Dr. Maria Pisani, thank you very much for joining us on today's show.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Now, let's talk about migration and integration. Policy-wise, beautiful words, nice strategies that seem to be put in place. However, let's talk about the implementation at the community level in terms of acceptance. What's your take on this policy in particular, the integration policy?
I think before we can speak about the integration policy in Malta, we need to sort of take a step back and look at what has happened in Malta over the last couple of decades and before that as well. You mentioned my name while we were preparing for the interview. You said Pisani, is that Italian?
Pisani, yes.
It is Italian, but it's also a relatively common name in Malta. And if you look at our surnames, they are from everywhere. From North Africa, my great nana was Abdillah. Names such as Borj and Buttigieg are from North Africa. Pisani and many other names are from Europe, from Southern Europe, and then we have other names from Northern Europe. My point is that Malta has always experienced immigration. We're located at the center of the Mediterranean, and this flow of migration is evident in our names, in our architecture, in the languages that we use, and so on and so forth. up until relatively recently, Malta was a country of emigration. After the Second World War, Malta, and this is on one occasion, but there were many occasions where Malta experienced massive emigration. At one point, had the highest percentage of emigration of any country in the world. So migration is not new to Malta. If I use the term immigrant, people tend to associate that specifically with asylum seekers and refugees. And they started arriving in Malta on the boats, crossing from the north coast of Africa, predominantly Libya, and reaching Malta around 2002. It was actually a little bit earlier than that. And much of the conversation about immigration in Malta has focused on this specific group. But of course, they are not by far the largest number of migrants living in Malta. If we look at 2003, 2004, as we joined the European Union and started to receive many more migrants from the EU, today EU migrants represent the largest number by far, some nationalities more than others. In the past we had many British, I think nowadays there are more Italians, and also, of course, migrants coming from beyond the EU, filling important labor gaps. If we look at the care industry, I think if it wasn't for migrants filling employment gaps there, Malta would be challenged. Construction, the service industry, I can go on and on and on. So migration has evolved in Malta, but it's certainly nothing new to Malta. Now, if we look at 2003-2004 with the asylum seekers, I think this is when the language took on a particular angle, if you like.
A new form, sure.
A new form that has continued to different degrees, to varying degrees. We have webs of up and down, but nevertheless, I'd say the language surrounding asylum seekers and the arrivals of the boats to Malta has largely been couched in a language of invasion, constructed as a threat to our nation. We were told that the country was too small to host this number of refugees. This language fed into fear, the criminalization of refugees, persons who have a right to claim asylum, as recognized in our own constitution and the laws of Malta, and also fed into policy. Malta historically had a very harsh detention policy that was found to be a violation of human rights on more than one count. And the term integration was absent from local discourse for many, many years. We used to call it the I word. We couldn't even talk about it. So I think when we talk about migration today, we need to see this, you know, historical perspective and recent history as well. And as you rightly pointed out, today we do have an integration policy. And when I'm critical of subsequent governments. This isn't something that we can look at in the last 3 years or 5 years. Yeah. It goes way beyond that.
Okay.
We do now have an integration policy, and I'd say that integration, again, to varying degrees, is now part of policy discourse. In order for that policy to make any sense, we need cross-ministerial collaboration, and I think we need a shift in mindset. If you look on any website that promotes Malta, it promotes Malta as an inclusive society.
It does.
It highlights that the English language is one of our official languages, and that you will have no problem here in integrating into Maltese society. We are also told that in order to maintain our economic growth, booming economy, that we need more and more migrants to not only continue with the services that are provided today, but also to guarantee our welfare and pensions in the future. So there are many contradictions at play here, and it's clearly a very, very complex discussion. And I haven't spoken about race and racism and racialization. I'm putting that on the side for now. So Malta went from a relatively homogeneous society to an increasingly multicultural society in a relatively short period of time, coinciding obviously with EU membership, which brought many, many changes, a shift in economic model, embracing neoliberalism, which obviously affected Maltese life and Maltese culture, to social media and suddenly being, I think, one of the countries with the highest percentage of Facebook users in the world. It's quite bizarre if you think about it. We meet each other on a day-to-day basis and then we meet virtually as well. To commerce, shops, gaming, many new industries coming into Malta. So there has been rapid cultural change. And the Maltese have been a part of this cultural change and have called for this cultural change. But it also brings its challenges. And more often than not, migrants, now in the past I would say it was largely sub-Saharan Africans, but today we're seeing migrants in general are being scapegoated for the challenges that Malta faces as it transitions into a multicultural society. Now, I'm not talking about multiculturalism here as an ideology or as a policy, simply as a reality. Malta is a multicultural society.
Indeed.
And the Maltese people, and here I'm not talking about migrants, but Maltese citizens, are also increasingly diverse, with many speaking many different languages, of different faiths, of different sexual orientations, different compositions of families. So the Maltese are also changing. We've never really sat down and had a conversation about what this means about Malta, what this means about notions of Malteseness, and how, in concrete terms, do we support this process? I don't like the word manage. I think support is the process that we are looking for here. So when, for example, we push the idea of immigration in order to sustain economic development, I would say fine. But to what degree have we thought about housing for everybody? For everybody, the Maltese and migrants. To what degree have we invested in our education system? To what degree have we invested in our health system beyond bringing foreigners in to support the health system? I could go on and on and on. I mean, my basic point is we haven't had these conversations, or if we have, they're just scratching the surface. We have policy documents, but the Maltese and the migrants collectively have not engaged in this dialogue in a constructive manner. Rather, it's been fueled by fear, populist politics, irresponsible statements by politicians. It's toxic, and it doesn't help anybody.
Indeed, it doesn't. Now, you've laid the foundation so solidly for basically what we're talking about today. If this dialogue hasn't happened, if only the surface has been scratched, what are some of the issues that has caused this disjoint between the people and how much they understand, how much they accept and support these policies on the ground in its implementation?
I
as
think
a result,
that there are many issues that that you will come across. One is, as I said, this notion of Malteseness and Maltese culture. And of course, Maltese culture is changing, but I would argue that it's not changing solely because of migrants. Obviously, every migrant that comes to Malta brings their own perspectives, their own backgrounds, their own languages, and of course that changes Maltese society. But much, much more than that is Malta just being part of a globalizing process and the Maltese themselves embracing aspects of this globalization and moving beyond, be it virtually or physically, beyond the Maltese borders and coming back again. And obviously this involves constant cultural change. Culture is never static, it's always dynamic, and it's been very rapid in the last few years. So one of the questions we need to speak about is, what does it mean to be Maltese today? This is a conversation that we haven't had. How diverse are the Maltese? One of the ongoing issues is one of language that I think is an important conversation. We have a beautiful national language that needs to be protected. But at the same time, English is the global language, and as I said, we market English, almost deceptively so. On the one hand, come here and speak English, and on the other hand, no, you can't speak English, you're Maltese. But only certain classes of migrants are expected to speak Maltese. For others, it's the expat community, they're sort of given free leeway to speak whatever language they want. And if you're going to buy citizenship, which is essentially selling rights to those that can afford it, then language doesn't even come into the equation. The importance of faith, the Roman Catholic Church and other faiths in Malta, is a conversation that again we have not really engaged with. Housing is a big one. I spoke about embracing neoliberalism. It seems to be a race to the bottom in terms of salaries. Mm-hmm. My cards are always on the table. I embrace migration, but not when this comes with exploitation and the violation of rights. That doesn't help the migrant, and it doesn't help the Maltese worker. So we have to have conversations about equality, equity, and rights for all.
Are these stipulated in policy?
There is the integration strategy, and the department responsible for this strategy are very dedicated and have implemented a number of programs as well. But as I said, if you don't have cross-ministerial support on these issues and the real investment in the process, then we're essentially chasing our own tails. You cannot be saying we need to import 30,000 migrants, 50,000 migrants in order to maintain this growth without making the same kind of investment in our basic infrastructure. And then it would be unfair to blame the migrants when this whole process implodes. And it is imploding. Rent prices have multiplied incredibly over the last couple of years. So you have people living in substandard accommodation, you have overcrowding. Those people, Maltese and migrants at the lower brackets of the economy, can't afford decent housing. And again, to then blame the migrant for this situation is unfair. And many of those that do it know it's unfair, but it's also
to score political points?
It's populist politics.
Well, indeed it is. With the issue of politicians and them sort of fueling the language, the negative language that incites fear and all that, what is that a representation of?
I mean, I've mentioned populist politics on more than one occasion, I think. It is, look, it's very easy to create the other. Now, migrants don't have votes, first and foremost. So there's nothing quite like a common enemy to draw people together. And this is what politicians have done. Politicians across the political spectrum have used migrants, specifically, I would say, in particular, refugees and race and color, to generate fear, to feed into this notion that the nation needs protecting. So all this conversation, the onus throughout is on national security, to the detriment of human security. But let's break that down a little bit further as well. When we're talking about national security, what is the threat exactly? We use militarized, or the politicians use almost militarized discourse, such as invasion, attack, and so on. Where I would argue that the only threat really is to notions of national identity. But this national identity in its own right, first and foremost, is a construction. Mm-hmm. Even if we speak about the Maltese, well, I'm Maltese. There are 450,000 of us. I probably know maybe 1,000 Maltese in general. So even this idea, Benedict Anderson speaks about the imagined community. So we imagine the Maltese in a particular way that, of course, is homogenized and essentialized and does not reflect reality. Mm-hmm. So the language, what I'm saying is the language that is used does not reflect a reality. It is a construction for a reason. And this reason is to somehow bring the Maltese together, united against this perceived threat that does not exist.
Right. So essentially, the image that we're painting is that Malta has opened its arms and saying, you know, we're officially come in, we're accepting of it. In what way can policies that would complement that idea help migrants?
Again, when we're talking about migrants, we're talking about such a diverse group in Malta with different experiences, different expectations, and different needs. Before we even speak about policies, I would say first we need to have a conversation about Malta as a multicultural society and what that means. What does that mean for migrants living in Malta, and what does that mean for the Maltese? We also need policies in place and support structures in place, from my perspective, need to be grounded in a human rights approach that ensures that any migrant that is living in Malta has the support they need in order to be able to live a dignified life. And that you cannot assume as well that people are just people are going to find that information. More often than not, particularly in our society, it's a relatively closed society, and we rely very much on knowing somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. The information needs to be provided and needs to be accessible from a very early stage. It's interesting, I've spoken a lot about issues like education and housing that are very important, and I've also spoken about notions of Malteseness and Malta making this transition. I'm Maltese and I'm a returned migrant. I've been back in Malta 32 years, but I recall when I came here, the struggles that I experienced, and I had a roof over my head, I had family in Malta, and many of the struggles I faced are the struggles that migrants speak about with me today. And much of that is about relationships, friendships. And this is where I find people really get stuck, and that's almost across the spectrum of different kinds of migrants, people feeling lonely. And this sounds strange, in a country that prides itself on being welcoming and friendly. And I think we are very friendly and very prepared to help. But it seems to me that many migrants of different nationalities are living parallel lives in Malta. So we have different migrant communities, but they're not really a part of that national community. They get along okay, they live okay, side by side, but the relationships between them, I see that as problematic, and migrants mention it a lot. You know, we try to make friends with Maltese, and it just doesn't happen. Everyone seems to be closed in there. I think it's very interesting.
What could be the problem?
I don't know, because today, whereas I was a migrant then, a returned migrant, today I'm one of the Maltese, so obviously it raises questions for me. Well, what am I doing? You know, I mean, I'm part of this. It's not about me pointing fingers elsewhere. I think for second-generation migrants, children in the education system, this changes. You know, when children go to school, they start making friends, and we're still slowly going through this process. You have to you have to factor in time. You know, there is the issue of time, and such relationships take time too. But I think we tend to live in bubbles, whether it's in social media or in our real world, and there needs to be more effort. More organized effort to create these spaces, to develop these relationships. And that's community development. But community development and community action that deals with contemporary issues, because we have a lot of community action, a lot of community development in Malta. I mean, if I look at the church, they do lots. I mean, it's amazing the amount of voluntary work that contributes to our society. But I don't feel like we're not reaching out to the different migrants and creating spaces just to make friends and get to know each other. And I think this is a very important component too that keeps emerging in research over and over and over again.
Do you think, especially in the case of migrants who came by boat, do you think it's more fear on the part of the Maltese national?
There is definitely fear, and fear doesn't come out of nowhere. The language that has surrounded up until this week, the leader of the opposition mentioned gangs and children feeling fearful of gangs. This language is not helpful. Migrants and refugees are scared too. And so again, generating and feeding into this toxic atmosphere doesn't help anybody. It is true that there has been a massive increase in migration, relatively speaking. Malta has made this fast transition, but the problem is not the migrant. The problem is this lack of support for this process. So I understand Maltese people, some Maltese people who may feel fearful. I also understand refugees and people of color who are fearful and face racism and racialization on a day-to-day basis. Mm. But where are the opportunities for dialogue? Where are the spaces for conversations? To what degree are the authorities reaching out to these different migrants and the Maltese community, not just authorities, NGOs, and the university as well, to create spaces to get to know the other and then to appreciate our common experiences and our common fears, fear about our families, fear for our children, fear about the education system. If migrants are living here, they're invested in Malta too. When we are speaking about Malta in this regard, we're speaking about a Malta that belongs to everyone. So it's a conversation that we need to have with everybody.
Indeed, it is a conversation that we need to have. And we've just had some right now. And hopefully this conversation will continue on other platforms and also on a higher level so that what needs to be done does happen. And then we all continue to enjoy this beautiful country called Malta. Thank you very much, Dr. Maria Fazzani, for making it to the show today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're still listening to Talking Eds on Campus FM. My name is Solis Rose Quarter, and we've been talking about migration and integration. But as you well know, this is not a topic that can be exhausted in one episode or even five episodes. It's an ongoing conversation that we all need to have at various levels in society. Don't forget that if you want to hear more of these episodes, visit the Campus FM website and tune in to next week's episode as well. I'd like to wrap up here. I hope you've learned as much as we have. And if you want to learn more about the IMASC community, that's the third cohort, the IMASC third cohort of which I am a part, and the producers of Talking Eds, do make it a point to visit www.gla.ac.uk. And you can also check the requirements for more information regarding our program. To follow the journey of the third cohort of IMASC, visit our blog at https://imaskunmasked.squarespace.com. Once again, migration and integration is a conversation that we all need to have to continue having that conversation. I'm Solis Rose Quarter. Good day.